friends. Welcome once again to the Perfect Bound Podcast. This is episode 43 of a podcast all about anything and everything comic books and comics related, brought to you by the Panel Jumper and Comics Dungeon. My name is Ben. With me, as always, is Nicole Lamb.
Hello.
Cole Hornaday.
Greetings.
And Mr. Chris Casso.
Hello.
How is everybody this evening?
Splendiferous.
Good.
We recorded at night, but they air during the day. Well, they air. They drop at 8 o'clock in the morning. So I do know some people who listen to it, you know, like on their drive into work. And so, hey, it's a dark evening here in Seattle, Washington. It's bright sunshine. The birds are flying around, I'm sure. Anyway, speaking of being here in Seattle, Washington at the Comics Dungeon, there's an event coming up called Ladies' Night. Actually, it's a recurring event from what I understand.
It's a recurring monthly event.
Excellent. Well, why don't you... We mentioned it briefly last week, but why don't we talk a little bit more about it in depth this week?
Did you have something to say?
Not at all. Nope. Keep going.
Okay. So we have monthly's Ladies' Nights. This next one will be Saturday, December 12th. From 6 p.m. to 8 p.m., and we have monthly themes, and those themes get 20% off. So we've had a superhero one, we had a female creator one. This month's December 12th one is going to be all about diversity in comics.
Okay.
So that covers a very wide array of things. It could be, you know, people of color like Kamala Khan. It could be LGBT or kind of fringe stuff like Sunstone. So it's going to cover a whole lot of different types of books. And we'll have sweet treats provided by Mighty O Donuts and some fresh coffee.
What?
And please have some coffee because I'll have too much.
Yeah, we drink about a half of that thing like at the end of the night because no one drank it. And then we're up till 3-4 in the morning.
I'm still awake from the first one.
Go get some sleep, sir.
You need to eat some Mighty O Donuts to soak that up,
it's
son.
It's lovely. And the events are very like meet and greet, you know, just very casual, you know. Anyone who wants to just schmooze about lady types. And it's just to create a safe space for people to try new things, to ask questions about stuff that maybe they wouldn't on a normal basis. And we'll have a special guest, a local artist, Tatiana Gill. She has a self-published book called Plus, which is all about body positive drawings, depicting all different, you know, there's a gem that's a different size, you know. So very cool things. And did you have something to add?
Just for clarification's sake, it is open to everyone, but please don't be a creeper.
Yeah.
Not that I think any of our viewers, listeners, are creepers. But
if
we did.
They are viewers. They
if
are creepers.
Viewers, yes. They are currently
but
creepers.
We did have a gentleman come in that evening, and he was just like, "Do you mind if I sit down and take notes?" And we're like,
what?
"There's nothing to take notes of." And he was like, "What?" And I'm like.
Unless it's for your thesis on your women's studies graduate degree university.
Yeah. But we don't want to have it a space where we kick the boys out. I don't feel like that really shows like a safe space and welcoming. But, you know, so if you want to come, boyfriend, girlfriend, daughter, father, whatever.
Bring your dog.
Bring your dog, especially.
Everybody.
We love dogs. And Chris and I will be here who loves dogs probably the most.
Will you have doggy treats?
Well,
I will if they tell me they're going to bring their dog.
All right, bring your dog to Ladies' Night, and they'll get a tasty, tasty treat that will probably look like a bone. All right. So, do we have anything else to say about Ladies' Night? So, it's what time does it start?
6 p.m. to 8 p.m.
6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Yeah, don't drink that much coffee at 6 o'clock in the evening.
I know. It's good coffee, though.
I know. It's
delicious.
It's here, so you have to.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
We pay for the coffee. We're going to use the coffee.
All right. Hopefully you're all jazzed up because, Chris, you're going to be leading us through Battle Angel Alita. Apparently, Robert Rodriguez is taking over the James Cameron-produced film. Write it, too? Or is it a Cameron script?
So I don't know if there was plans for who's going to do a script that's an adaptation of this comic. Because the thing is, this has been in production limbo for upwards of a decade. And so for context, Battle Angel Alita is one of my favorite comic books, hands down.
It's, one thick book.
Well, there's a story to that. So it's by a fellow named Yukito Kishiro. And here's the interesting thing. The original Battle Angel books are out of print and cannot be regularly picked up at comic book stores. The originals are it's about 9 volumes, if I'm remembering correctly. And then they did Star Trek before Star Trek did Star Trek. And that's what they said. The creator decided, I'm going to go back one chapter, change one moment in history, and create another timeline. So the books that you can buy now are the alternate timeline. They're very good, but they're not what I will always recommend to you. Battle Angel Alita is a cyberpunk dystopian action-fighting manga that follows this young cyborg woman who was found, her head was found in the junkyard and her brain was still intact. And so the man who found her rebuilt her and she has no memory of her past. The man who found her is a doctor who sidelines as a bounty hunter because there is no police force where they live. And when she finds out, she goes to find him and suddenly she has this fighter instinct that she didn't know she had and she could basically murder anybody. And so the impetus of the whole series is her trying to figure out, who is she? What is she? Is she human? Is she cyborg? Like, is there any humanity intact? And all these other things. And it keeps on spiraling into all these other crazy ideas. One of the reasons I love it, I consider Yokito Kishiro to be the spiritual successor of Jack Kirby. He creates the most inventive worlds and characters and fight scenes, and he pulls from old world mythology, other sci-fi, and all these other elements, and he brings them together into this tapestry of weirdness. And, like, to give you a concept of that weirdness, most of it can be very serious, dark, and crazy, and then later on, he introduces the idea of Karate Planet, where everybody on the planet knows karate, and they fight nonstop karate, and there's a robot called what's the robot from Lost in Space? Or Robbie the Robot. There's like Karate Robbie Robo.
Forbidden Planet.
Sorry, yeah. I'm mixing my robots up.
Got it. Sorry. Just had to do that.
And so there becomes a giant karate fight between every robot in the universe. And then it goes back to a vampire story. And like so he jumps all over the place and it sounds random, but it actually is very cohesive. So
you were talking about doing Star Trek before they did Star Trek, and then you're talking about the scarcity of other volumes of the series?
So the original volumes...
So is the original timeline, storyline...
Difficult to find.
Okay.
Yeah. The new
and
stuff...
And is it because there's sort of like retroactively wiping that away, or why is that?
I don't know, because the thing is, it's flipped publishers a couple times.
Okay.
And that's one of the problems. There was a period not too long ago where American manga the distribution slumped, and some of the big publishers just disappeared or stopped putting out stuff or went digital. So originally, I believe they were published by Viz, who did a lot of popular manga, and they're no longer really doing too much. They do a little bit. And it's been picked up by Kodansha, who also reprints like Akira and Ghost in the Shell. And so the new prints are of what they call Battle Angel Alita, The Last Order. And that's the alternate reality, the alternate timeline. And again, it's very good, but to understand why a lot of people love it and why it's a cult thing and why James Cameron went crazy, you should read the original stuff. Because
it went crazy. It makes it sound like it's like Providence.
Crazy. It was already crazy. Well, so that's the thing. It was something about it that just, he was just like, I have to do this. I am the only person alive who can translate this. And that's what Avatar was supposed to be. Avatar was his test run. There's a lot of things in Avatar that if you've read the series and then you watch Avatar, you're like, wait, oh, you were test running that one big robot guy, weren't you? But then he made however billion, trillion dollars off of Avatar. He's like, I'm going to do another Avatar.
And then, I'm doing Avatar for the rest of my life.
Yeah, pretty much.
And then so hearing this news that he's passing off the directing to Rodriguez is just like, oh, you remembered. Because I'm pretty sure he bought the rights already to do it. Nah. So it's just
so
been on
what
the
is
shelf.
The what? How difficult would it be? Because you've intrigued me, and the geek wheels are turning in my little brain, and I'm a terrible completist. And if I want to go back and find the previous stories in American,
I think you could get them.
Is it going to cost me an arm and a leg?
I don't think so. I think they are achievable through Amazon fairly easily.
Okay. I don't know. I thought maybe you could get it through the library too.
You could probably do the library too. You might want to check Powell's too.
Yeah.
So I think it's not too difficult. It's just readily available through comic outlets, not so much.
Is there, and do you know, is there a way that they've distinguished the original timeline from the alternate timeline stories? I mean, these are called The Last Order.
Yeah, but... Last Order is the key thing. The originals don't even really have a number system. They're all titled. Like, one of them is, like... Angel
so you're
crying.
Telling me I could potentially lose myself and battle Angel Alita and not be seen for a very long time.
Is yes.
that what you're
talking about? It's a fun place to disappear to, too. It's a violent
right.
place.
Okay.
Yes.
No. You may be yes. a changed man when you reemerge.
Yes. I'm a changed man every morning, Ben Lawrence.
I'll leave that there.
Robo Karate Robbie. That was his name.
Robo
sorry.
Karate Robbie.
Yeah. Okay, sorry. Thank you for letting me go on about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, so, no, it's awesome. Thank you.
Chris, do you remember if they had mentioned anything about like when production would start or when they planned to
you know,
release
I,
it, when they plan to make it? Is
I don't
this like
recall.
A 2020 kind of thing?
Yeah, probably. Considering how much it's going to have to go into it. So like to give you an idea of the world, everyone is cybernetic and everything is this huge mass dystopian. Like the city that they live in the beginning is actually a junkyard pile heap that's underneath a floating city paradise that is like the richest people left alive in the world.
Uh-huh.
So like just the setting will cost lots of money to make. So I imagine, I hope I'm still alive by the time it comes out.
Alrighty. Well, yeah. I'm sure you will be.
Thank you for your optimism.
Yeah. And I think Rodriguez is a good fit for that. I mean, he did that, what was it, Return from Planet X or whatever, that thing that was part of the Grindhouse stuff.
Right.
Planet Terror.
Planet Terror. Yeah, I totally made up that other title.
Still sounded accurate, though.
Yeah, totally.
And kind of fun.
But I liked that movie. And right. if this is like a cyberpunk, like futuristic kind of cool, I think he could probably play around with that pretty cool.
Yeah, I think visually he's a good choice for it.
Yeah.
And casting doesn't really matter. It's pretty flexible. You know? So
maybe
a lot of it's big, ugly robots.
Right.
You know, so yeah.
Cool. All right. Battle Angel Alita. Look for it sometime in the near or distant future.
Hopefully, yeah.
In the future.
Anyway, so today...
Where we'll all be spending the rest of our lives.
We're living in the future as we speak. Anyway, it's just I don't have my monorail. They have self-driving cars, but I don't have a monorail. So this episode is going to air on December 7th, the date that will live in infamy. So I asked my panel... what are any recommendations for good historical fiction comics to read? Because I kind of dig that.
So, do you mind if I start here?
Please do.
I will always recommend Will Eisner's Last Day in Vietnam. It's a collection of just short stories that run the gamut of emotions, some very dark, some very uplifting, and it's just different... human stories taking place across different theaters in Vietnam. And then one in particular for you, sir, it's not the one I'm holding. I just needed to remember the writer's name. James Sturm did an amazing book called The Golem's Mighty Swing, and it's about a Jewish baseball team in the 20s who decided to adapt a gimmick of their largest man wearing an outfit, a dress of the golem.
Okay.
And the whole book is basically about all the racial prejudices at the time and just that team's struggle in the leagues.
Right.
So that's an amazing, amazing story. And I will pass it on to anyone else.
Cole, do you got any? You got
I got a couple. This is Nicole, did you have one?
No, y'all can take
them. Okay. Well, I have a couple different books because, you know, you kind of released the floodgate with that particular question. Because I realized that there were actually a lot of comics and graphic novels that were of historical relevance that I thoroughly enjoyed. One of them was by a gentleman named Kyle Baker, who it was originally a two-part story called Revolution, published by Image Comics. I think it's now been collected into a complete edition. But it's essentially the story of the first slave revolt in the United States. In the United States, yeah. And the gentleman who the slave who initiated that. This is a grim and really it's a hard story to read because you know, as a privileged white male, I read this and go, oh, we've come so far. And then I watch the news and go, yeah, Noel, no, we haven't. I hope this book is still in print. It's a powerful piece of work. It's done in an interesting narrative form that Mr. Baker began experimenting with at this point in his career, where it's not really a comic book, more like an illustrated novel. I highly recommend it. And it's actually a book that I think many schools started carrying in their public libraries. The other series of books that I came across were from another favorite artist of mine who's kind of fallen off the grid, is Timothy Truman. And back in the 80s, Tim Truman did a lot of books that were centered around Native American themes. The book that I enjoyed the most was he did for Eclipse Comics in the 80s called Scout. But he went down the road of more historical context stories. And Simon the Girty, the Renegade, I believe it's out of print, but it did go through several printings throughout the 80s and 90s. It's essentially the story of a Native American, a half-breed Native American man who actually during the American Revolution opted to join with the British and their Native American allies of the British in Detroit. The reason why I find this book series so fascinating is that I think it's a very accurate depiction of the way the world was back then. You meet historical figures that have been softened through time and television, like Dan'l Boone and his son Israel. And in reading these books, the first book is called Wilderness, the Borderland, and the second one is called Wilderness, Bloody Ground. You really get a really crisp, clean idea of the type of people it took to settle this country. They were savages. They were barbaric people. They were not nice people. And these historical figures that have been softened for us in television and film mm-hmm. are really depicted the way they probably really were. Because those people, the real Dan'l Boone, the real Simon Girty, they would not fit in contemporary society. They would be in prison. Or they would be, you know, in a mental institution or something. These people were really harsh.
It takes a lot to conquer a
It does. Whole it does. And that's why I appreciate these books, because it gave me a taste of what that reality must have been like.
Timothy Truman's artwork is really nice back in that period.
Back in that day, it was exceptional. His style has permutated in ways that I don't appreciate as much. But, man, I loved his work back then.
Mm-hmm.
All right, cool. Some great recommendations. And moving on to a bit of a lighter note. So a couple weeks ago, we had Heather Newfer, or as I like to call her, Nicole, and Georgia Ball.
It's her middle name.
It is her middle name. And Georgia Ball on the show. And I started following them on Twitter because I could. And I'm really glad I did. So what I want to ask from the panel here is, what other industry folk should I follow on Twitter?
So, you know, you could just pass right by me on that one, because I'm not much into that social media. Twitter's one I just don't grok, you know? It just, I don't know if it's just like the short, 140 characters or whatever.
Yeah.
Or, I don't know, I just don't care about it. Yeah, plus I don't have a phone, so it's like...
Oh, that's right. We didn't mention, this in the last 6 months. I'm surprised you haven't gotten one by now.
We haven't talked about my age, and we haven't razzed Chris about not having a phone.
Well, we are back from a bit behind, so let's bring those traditions
I'm
back.
Actually flipping through my Twitter right now, because I do follow a lot of comic book industry folks.
So people like, does Alan Moore have a Twitter? Because I think his tweet would be pretty fast.
I don't believe he does, and, you know, honestly, I don't know if I want to follow him.
I know Seth MacFarlane does.
G. Willow Wilson does. It's just at G. Willow Wilson.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I follow
She's
her.
She's very active on Twitter.
Yep.
Jeremy Whitley, who does Prince Less, which is one of my favorite series, he is very active on Twitter as well. And his handle is at JRome58. And then there's also, of course, if you wanted to follow the Valkyries, I think that's Annie down in Texas, who owns her own comic store. She puts all of the Valkyrie recommendations. So if I were to put something, she'd repost it.
Okay.
And it's at LCS Valkyries. So that's local comic shop Valkyries. If you want to just get some lady recommendations of what everyone's reading and excited about every week, that's a good one to follow.
Cool.
How about you, Cole?
I follow a lot of... publishers, because I just feel like I'm constantly out of the loop and what's coming out. Even when I skim Newsarama and Comics Vine and whatever on the web, I follow a lot of those. I follow a lot of my favorite writers, like writers like Busick, Busick. Can't remember how to pronounce his name. I'm getting tongue-tied because I'm looking at my Twitter feed on top of trying to talk at the same time.
I know.
Which
I'm
is
seeing
terrible.
Like Emily Carroll posting about Fallout. I'm like, what?
I follow Brian Michael Bendis. I follow, But the thing that I don't like about Twitter, and I think that will ultimately be the death of it because I keep hearing these things, is that it's really difficult to track this.
Yeah.
Have you actually heard about how the Twitter popularity is actually in decline? Because
that's good, because people have arguments on Twitter, which is the most ridiculous
people
thing.
People have arguments everywhere.
Never get into an argument on the internet.
One thing I would recommend, I do more Tumblr than I do that, because that's more of a visual thing.
Yeah.
I do follow a site called the Bristleboard on there, and it's the guy just posts tons of original artwork or comic sequences to long forgotten pieces of art, and it ranges from...
Yeah, I love that when you post that on the newsletter.
Those guys are
great. You will find that I often poach that from you on the Panel Jumper Facebook page.
So I was wondering where you get the content.
I get some of it from my own roaming around, but a lot of it I do poach from Chris, because he's a good source to steal from. Mm-hmm. I also follow,
don't steal from me.
For some silly reason, I follow the Panel Jumper on Twitter.
And you should too, at the Panel Jumper. I was going to say .com, but it's not.
No, it's not. It's just at the Panel.
If you have any recommendations for industry folk or even fictional characters to follow on Twitter or Tumblr, email them to us at perfectboundpodcast@gmail.com, and we'll put them up in the show notes.
Have you gotten any emails?
I receive a couple emails, yeah. There's some people who have emailed. One person, actually, I think he straight up emailed Cole, and he Cole forwarded it to us. We've got a couple of people who...
That one was very nice.
I believe so.
I think it was Dominic, wasn't it?
Oh, I also follow Neil Gaiman, because I love Neil Gaiman.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And a couple of people have submitted quiz time questions for
Yay!
Us.
We love those people.
Please take their quizzes.
We'll get one of those. we'll get questions from one of those submitters next week.
Yay!
All right. So let's go on to Book Report. And Chris Casso, what do you want to talk about? Because that's basically all we did this week was talk about books. But let's do it again.
Yeah. I'm still backtracking and reading old things that I know I like instead of all the stuff I don't want.
So is this the obscure copy that nobody
it works
get.
That way?
Yeah, so again, I got something you can't find. So it's
wow,
a collection.
Mean.
Yeah, I know. It's a collection called The Survival Machine, and it's a collection of short stories by a fellow named Prentice Rollins, who is an inker who has done a lot of DC stuff. He inks a lot of Ethan Van Sciver's work. Ethan Van Sciver's done a lot of popular Green Lantern Flash stuff with Geoff Johns. And so this guy draws and inks everything and self-published it. And it's very much a Twilight Zone collection. It's a bunch of short stories of various content. The title story follows a eccentric billionaire who's dying, who has a machine built that will keep him alive until it can find the cure for his ailment. And he kind of starts... time starts moving faster for him, and basically he sees like the future unfold and the machine absorbing all creation and killing things, trying to cure him. There's a great short story about a guy that when he was a child, he could never find certain things like his socks after they went to the washing machine, and he was convinced that they disappeared into another reality, and so he spends the entire rest of his life trying to make himself disappear the same way, and he was convinced it was velocity, so he kept on throwing himself at anything in the world. It was pretty great. And then, like, one of the best stories is about this nomadic man who travels the world, and it's like the world's completely destroyed, and he doesn't have language anymore. He barely comprehends anything. He's only following instinct, and he keeps on going to this one city because there's like a letter that he has to look at and he can't read it anymore, but it's like his last words because he's immortal and everything else has died on the planet except for like new creatures that fear him. It's very, very Twilight Zone. It's a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. I bet you don't have to pay much for it because nobody knows what the hell it is. I paid $8 when it first came out. And again, you could probably find it on something like Amazon or whatever.
How long ago was it printed?
Ooh, probably 15 years, maybe a little bit less. Let's see, 2003. And because there used to be a small publisher called Monkey Suit Press, so you could guess why I found them. And
because monkeys.
Yes.
Because
monkeys. And so, yeah, it's just a lot of fun, worth checking out. Great sci-fi great. Stories.
What I'm glimpsing of the artwork looks terrific, too.
Yeah, really yeah. detailed.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Nifty.
All right, Cole Hornaday, what about you?
Well, I finally got my hands on the fifth volume of Saga, the Saga trade, you know, by the ever-popular series written by Brian K. Vaughan and drawn by Fiona Staples. Again... Marco, Alana, and Hazel trying to survive against the backdrop of this really twisted, ancient, ongoing war between their races headed by the robot people. It would kind of be a waste of time and kind of confusing to go into all the plot threads of Saga as they continue to evolve. I just want to say that Fiona Staples is a fascinatingly marvelous illustrator, and Brian K. Vaughan writes people I believe in. They could have horns, they could have wings, they could have faces that are TV sets, and they are real, whole, poetic people. And he is he never disappoints, but he has because Swamp Thing was, yeah. But he's really hit his stride with this book, and I thoroughly enjoy it. And as I was finished reading this volume, I was like, you know what? I think I'm going to go back to the start and read them over again because they're all, even the supporting characters are compelling.
All right, cool. Saga. And Nicole, what about you?
I read something that came out a little while ago called The Goddamned. Sorry for this. It's kind of blasphemous.
All right. Bleep her.
The Damned. It's by Jason Aaron and is the artist the game?
R.M. Guerrera.
R.M. Guerrera. Very beautiful. It reminds me of heavy metal stuff. So it's a playoff of the Cain and Abel story. And so it's very like a biblical story, but it's a different take on it. It's like a wasteland. And there's all these savage guys and Cain is, walking through the world and, kicking a lot of butt. And, it's a pretty interesting story. I read it and immediately it's got that like European style to the artwork. And that's why I said heavy metal. And I just really think that's a great fit. Really, really cool story. So I'm really looking forward to continuing to read this and see how it unfolds.
So are the characters really named Cain, Abel? Are they really the children of Adam and Eve?
After they get out of Eden because everything falls apart. After it's like fall. A big wasteland. Sure. Yeah, it's a big wasteland and that he's, you know, roaming through.
Abel hasn't shown up yet, but someone else did.
No.
But we won't spoil that.
No, I won't. Really cool. It's just, yeah, I definitely say check it out. It's
cool.
It's a quick book report.
Is it in a trade or is just this the first issue?
It's the first issue. It's just issue one. So. All right.
Guerrero's artwork reminds me of Eduardo Risso from 100 Bullets. Uh-huh. So if you're a fan of that style, this will appeal to you as well.
Cool. Well, all right.
Yeah, it looks very European in its layout because it's the panels are never consistent. There's a lot of different vertical.
Yeah, how do you read something like that?
Very carefully and with great relish.
It was pretty easy. I've had some relish. Paneling that's just been like, where am I supposed to go?
Because I'm still learning how to read a comic, I have to admit. There have been a number of times where I've had to reread a page because I read it incorrectly.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to give you a copy of Scott McCloud's Understanding Comics.
I've read that.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
It didn't help.
Cool. Apparently, it didn't keep. But, you know, there's some pages where the panels just like, you think there's a flow up until that point.
Some people try to get fancy and they kind of backfires on them. So
some people I just don't think they're making intuitive paneling sometimes.
I agree with Nicole. I think it's always going to happen.
I think for me it was more of like let's say the panels are split, you know, like 2x2, so four panels on a page. This is a very simple explanation or example. And so you're used to reading, you know, left, right, top, left, right, bottom. Mm-hmm. Yes. But let's say on one page, the artist decides to create the panel, like a tall panel mm-hmm. on the left, without making it one single panel. The artwork spans the gutter, but the gutter is still there.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
I'm really grateful when an artist will give me a little arrow.
Yes.
You know, and they think that, I don't know if they think that's insulting to their style or work, but you know what? Sometimes I'm just happy for the little arrow or something that
or
guides
like
your eye.
I was going to say, like, there's been speech bubbles that kind of guide you. So, the dialogue will show you how to read the paneling.
Precisely.
That I reviewed Neil Gaiman's Technophage a little while ago, and there's one sequence where I would have been lost if it wasn't for the bubbles, because they turn the bubbles into type boxes and they guided you everywhere you needed to go and it became like a beautiful map. So it's like sometimes people are smart.
Yep.
Cool. All right. Well, that's Book Report and that's our show. But before we go, of course, we play quiz time. Get your quiz hats on, everybody. Nicola has hers on, but I think she's just cold. But so this week, our questions are coming to us from Cole. Lay it on us, sir.
So the theme for this week's quiz time is drugs are bad. Drugs are bad. So the theme is comic book characters and their controlled substances of choice.
Well done.
So, okay. So, well yeah, done. Just bear with me. The theme may not hold water all the way to the end. All right. Question number one. DC's Golden Age hero, Hourman, attains his superhuman strength and agility for 1 hour at a time through the use of this miracle vitamin. What is the name of the miracle vitamin?
Miraclo.
Excellent.
I was going to yell it out first and ruin everything.
You know, I agonize over this copy on my quizzes.
For those listening at home, Chris's hand went up immediately.
I like
as
Hourman,
I knew it would. As I knew it would. Next question. Following a tragic incident in which Batman was unable to save a little girl from death, he was offered this performance-enhancing drug that awoke in him a growing love of violence. This is the same substance that made the villain Bane the man he is today.
Venom.
Yes, sir. Now, question number three. Now, here's where we start getting wonky, so please forgive me. I'm playing fast and loose with this. In the 1990s, beloved extraterrestrial detective John Jones, DC's Martian Manhunter, found himself with this frosting-centered chocolate cookie sandwich monkey on his back. Withdrawal from their narcotic effect would turn John Jones into a slobbering, mindless, hulking, rampaging beast until his appetite was satisfied.
Chocos replace
Oreos. Oreo cookies. Very good. Wow. You are the winner. All right, here we're going to get a little bit more loosey-goosey with the concept. Number four, Eli Bradley, grandson of the original African-American Captain America, Isaiah Bradley, took this drug to become Young Avengers leader, the Patriot. So Eli took this drug.
I don't recall the name of it. Vita something?
No. It's actually MGH, mutant growth hormone.
Oh, mutant hormone.
And this one is, I would consider it a controlled substance, also a catalyst. But the last one is, this is an alien alchemy on which the entire inhuman culture is based. It's a natural mutagen that activates their inhuman potential or kills them in horrific ways. Like I said, Chris, I agonized over this copy. You're going to have to let me get through it. Or turns them into moronic subhumans. In Marvel comics, mutants exposed to the substance become sterile, and it renders the X gene in humans inert. Pay attention to this as the Mary Marvel Cinematic Universe marches on, folks. What is the
Chris is
element?
Pointing to Nicole. Nicole is pointing back.
Terrigen Mist.
That's
all
it.
All right. Yeah. Well, thank you, Cole. Thank you, everybody. That's our show. You can find us every week at perfectboundpodcast.com. Send us quiz questions. Send us anything you want at perfectboundpodcast@gmail.com. I check that email regularly. Trust me. And yeah, subscribe to us on iTunes or any RSS reader of your choice. Leave us a review if you want. And you can see everything Cola Hornaday and I do at thepaneljumper.com. Our next episode is coming out sometime soon,
Very soon. It might even be a happy holiday gift for you.
It'll certainly be a holiday gift for Cole once I finish it. You can also come to the Comics Dungeon at 319 Northeast 45th Street, where they have wonderful events and signings, and you can find any comic you want. If they don't have it, Chris or Nicole will order it for you.
We'd be happy to.
They'd be happy to.
Magic it up.
319 Northeast 45th Street in beautiful downtown Wallingford, suburb just north of Seattle, or 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at comicstension.com. Thanks for listening, and we will see you next week.